RandomChatter.com presents
Oliver Queen,
an Arrow podcast.
Now I will fulfill my father's dying wish.
Dedicated to the discussion of the Arrow television series.
Bring down those who are poisoning my city. To do this, I must become someone else. I must become
Green Justice. Welcome back, everybody, to Green Justice, an Arrow podcast. I'm your host, Jay.
And I'm Josh, stupid.
You're not the sidekick this week. You know that, right?
Oh, I'm not? Okay.
You're just the co-host.
Am I the obsessed nemesis?
Yeah. Let's hope not, because that was creepy. Anyway, you guys have discovered the number one podcast dedicated to the CW television show Arrow, with discussion and commentary on all the various episodes. And as Josh pointed out, we are going to be talking about obsessed, crazed fans, which...
We have obsessed, crazed fans?
No, that's what I was going to say. We don't have any, but Oliver does. It sounds like she wants to get Oliver pants off. Oliver's pants off. That kind of fell flat.
Yeah. I'm interested in getting obsessed fans. I got to do more salmon ladder, apparently.
Salmon ladder is big, and walking around, well, I don't know, this is probably not appropriate for your work environment, and maybe even less so for mine, but, you know, shirtless salmon laddering in your, you know, cube or whatever you've got might be a good way to go about doing it. I don't know. Or
yes, they discourage that at my school. They don't want me to salmon ladder in my classroom.
Salmon ladder, right. I can understand it's dangerous. There's lawsuits and stuff. Maybe if you rented out $10 million necklaces, that would work.
Yeah, they'd let me do that.
They'd be okay with that?
Yeah, I think so. If I gave my boss, my principal, a $10 million necklace or...
What would he think?
I don't know what he'd think. He might like it. I'll have to ask him.
All right. Well, why don't you tell us about this week's episode?
Oh, yeah. We're talking about the episode, aren't we?
We are going to talk about the episode, yeah.
This episode, 7 of season 3 from Arrow, Draw Back Your Bow. November 19th, 2014 was when this episode graced my television set. Do they still call them a television set? We're just calling it TV.
It's a lot of people just have screens, you know? I don't know.
Yeah, television screen. Okay.
We are in the 21st century.
It was written by Wendy Miracle and Beth Schwartz. Another woman team writing this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. I hadn't noticed that ahead of time. I just it kind of flew past me, but interesting. Directed by Rob Hardy, though. So let me tell you a little bit about this, but first, let me grace your earbuds here. Cupid... Please hear my cry, and let your arrow fly straight to my lover's heart for me.
For nobody else but me.
Oh, thanks for the backup. I hadn't asked you for that. So, Carrie Cutler is taking that classic Sam Cooke song to heart as she courts the arrow. Ever since she saved her, you know, ever since he saved her from being a Mirakuru smudge on a back alley street, Carrie now calls herself... Cupid, and she has had a crush on the arrow ever since then. And by crush, I mean dangerous psychotic obsession. She'll do anything to be with
DSM-4.
Yes.
Yeah,
she'll do anything to be with the arrow, even kill. And love must be in the air in this episode because Ray Palmer is falling for Felicity harder than a punch to the face, and she's realizing that, you know, she could do with a little normalcy in her love life. And by normalcy, I mean billionaire philanthropist, salmon ladder climbing abs, poster boy. Now, Oliver may not really be a fan of Felicity moving on in life. Now, even Thea, opening at opening Verdant, right? She's getting a little Twitter-pated as her new, very arrogant DJ for Verdant is coming on strong by sweeping in with a surprise kiss. And by kiss, I mean... I mean kiss in that case. So what does this mean? This means that love can be deadly on this week's Arrow.
Dun, dun, dun. And I think we all agree, and in talking to some friends, this should have been a February episode for some reason.
Yeah. Why wasn't it a February episode? This would have been fit in perfectly for... You know what? I know why.
Why's that?
Because there's not a supervillain called the Turkey.
I'm pretty sure they're Captain Turkey?
Captain Turkey?
No.
The Gobbler.
The Gobbler.
No, maybe not. No, I doubt it.
Well, I mean, what I posted on our Facebook page was, you know, if they can start putting up Christmas stuff in October, then, you know, of course, we can start doing Valentine's stuff in November, right?
Yeah, I suppose that makes sense. Okay. All right.
So, okay, so before we get into talking about the show, we got a little bit of news here. Greg Berlanti, one of the co-executive producers and writers of Arrow, as well as the lead producer on The Flash, he has been named the head writer for the 2015 Oscars, the 87th right. Academy Awards. So he is going to... be the head writer and work with Andrew Kreisberg, who also works with him on Arrow and Flash. Also, Michael Green, who worked on the Green Lantern script with him. And then Seth Graham Smith, who is the writer of Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. Very interesting. Very genre show writers that are associated with this, which is interesting.
I don't really keep up with who the writers are on Oscars. I didn't even realize they had writers, but I suppose it makes sense. I wonder if that's typical.
Yeah, I don't know. This is obviously something that we haven't discussed before on a previous podcast, so I'm not sure what happens. And of course, I didn't, you know, decide to look up any of that information in between recording the two shows. So, yeah, we'll still just wonder about this, and maybe someone out there can tell us...
maybe closer to the Oscars we can.
Yeah. February 22nd. Happy late Valentine's Day then.
There you go.
For that. And then just a reminder that we will be off next week for Thanksgiving, but we will be back to celebrate the second part of the Flash Arrow crossover, which airs on December 3rd. So you'll be hearing us later that week/weekend. And I'm very much looking forward to this. I've got some friends that are not watching The Flash. They're just watching Arrow. And I'm like, okay, remember, Tuesday night, you got to tune in and watch well, you don't have to, but you should watch The Flash because it's going to be really cool and because Arrow is going to be on there. And then come back the next night and watch the second part.
Yep. And I have just the opposite. I have people watching The Flash and not Arrow. So,
including
my kids. So they're interested in seeing this Arrow.
Do you recall... I mean, other than some other gimmicky things, like I remember there was a one night, like NBC shows, it wasn't really a crossover, but there was a blackout that happened that was on like Seinfeld,
right.
Friends, ER, and all
right,
those
I
shows.
I do remember that.
But I don't remember there ever really being a crossover, you know, between two shows like this.
No, unless you count like Scooby-Doo and the Harlem Globetrotters, maybe? I don't know.
Right, and that's weird because I was actually thinking something like that. Or even, was there Brady Bunch? There might have been like a Cosby Show New World crossover or something like that.
You know, I'm thinking like Happy Days, Laverne and Shirley or something like that. But I don't think the story ever went along. It was just more like guest appearances.
Right.
I mean, I could be wrong just going from memory, but...
Right.
I don't recall anything like this.
And this, you know, this really seems like an event. They're trying to make it kind of an event, you know, to capitalize on fans of one show getting to know the other show. And they're both shows share so much of the same DNA. I mean, they're both characters in the same comic book universe, as well as the same television universe. So there's a lot that can happen here. And it's interesting because I don't recall ever... you know, seeing something like this or, you know, and at least not in recent memory, unless
right.
you count like people from The Voice showing up on, you know, Hell's Kitchen or something like that.
I don't think that. Bad
I'm
people that didn't win American Idol that. On The Apprentice or something like that.
Yeah.
I I think it's cool, not just because, I mean, yes, you know, it's to promote both shows, and it's a gimmick or, you know, whatever.
It is a gimmick, right.
But what I think is kind of cool about it is it really harkens back to comic books, because they do this in comic books all the time. And I used to really – I actually got into a bunch of different comics because of things like this. You know, I would start buying different comics after that. There was a series I remember doing – one of the first times I did this as an adult, there was a series with Wave Rider. Do you remember that?
Wave Rider.
Oh, I think that was his name, Wave Rider. He was kind of a yellow guy with the rainbowy hair, and he time traveled and stuff like that.
Okay. I mean, Wave Rider is a character, yeah, from – it was a DC character, right? Like,
yes.
From one of their event their summer event type books, I want to say. Like mm-hmm. Armageddon or something along those lines.
It might have been. It was Armageddon, I think. I think that's where it came from. But anyway, that was one of the first times I started buying other comic books, because I bought them because of the crossover. So, you know, it's like I said, it's a gimmick to probably get more viewers of both shows crossing over, vice versa, you know. But mm-hmm. It's cool. It's fun. It's fun to watch. And I bet you could do some really cool stuff if you did things like this.
And depending on how it goes, I'm sure they'll do it again. What I find interesting is that, you know, we just had Felicity guest appear on The Flash. So she's, you know, she's going to be one up on everybody else. Well, I guess I take that back, because Oliver was on the first episode of The Flash.
That was more of a cameo, though.
Right. It was more of a cameo appearance than a guest appearance.
And I wouldn't consider that a crossover.
Yeah, well,
because I think this is going to be more story crossover.
It sounds like the story, you know, it'll be one of those things where, you know, you're reading your Flash comic book and it's like, this issue, you know, doesn't continue next month in The Flash. It continues, you know, next week in Green Arrow number whatever. And you're like, oh, man, I don't collect that. I got to remember to go buy that so I can find out what happened next.
Do you think if you put the two title cards of the two shows next to each other, it creates one big picture?
Ooh, that'd be cool. No, but... I didn't put this in the notes, but since you bring up the title card,
mm-hmm.
this... a friend of mine from work, he's like... He tweets me, or I guess he texted me. He's like... different title card this week. And I'm like, I'm not watching it live yet. Hang on, man. And he's like, sorry. And I figured out, you know, right off the bat, I'm like, well, I bet they're going to have Cupid's arrow tip on there, which they did. But they've had guest archers on the show before and have never swapped out the title card. And we've now kind of discovered that they've been changing the title card every season. So this is really weird for them to change this title card for this one episode.
Yeah, I think it's the only time they've ever changed the title card for a specific show.
Mm-hmm. Again, since we weren't super paying attention for the first maybe, I don't know, year and a half.
I did on the second season. I started paying attention to the title because they changed the little intro. They changed what he said. So
right.
I started paying a little bit more attention, and when they did change it, and they would change the title sequence. You know, they would put different scenes in for the title sequence.
Sure.
But I never noticed that. I kind of watch for stuff like that.
Yeah,
At least starting the second season.
And I mean, I can only say they just did it because of Cupid for this episode. But now it makes me think okay, so the title card has been very specific to the character in it. But all season before this, we've gotten this weird tri arrowhead or something like that. You know, it's got multiple points on it, basically.
Yeah.
And some sort of, I don't know, Arabic or Chinese writing on it, which could lead us, you know, either towards the Hong Kong storyline or to the Ra's al Ghul storyline that we've got, and I'm wondering if they're trying to, by putting this arrowhead on it, the red spade, which I don't know why they were thinking, oh, look, it's a spade. It's
like, duh, did anybody notice red. It was red?
Now, when I watch it again, I'm like, you know, they just pulled this out of Isaac Stanzer's chest, as Oliver said. So it would be red, and it's, but it's like, well, maybe it's just blood. You know, it's a spade covered in blood. I'm like, well, maybe, but I don't know. That's... I don't know how they could confuse that. But, of course, you know, I think we knew, you know, there was this character called Cupid. It made sense.
Yeah, sure. I guess.
But I'm wondering if by them putting the new title card in, they're trying to draw attention to the regular title card and make people go, well, okay, well, why is there that title card? Or, you know, why is there that arrowhead on there? So, I don't know. It's, like we said... I don't know, beginning of the season, there's some reason for it. It relates somehow, but we just don't know what it is.
Well, I kind of dug that they changed it. It seemed a little odd that they changed it for this particular show and this particular character, but I think they were just really kind of trying to make that special arrowhead stand out.
You think next week it'll be a boomerang on there?
Yeah, yeah, just like a stick with a boomerang on the end of it. That's it.
And then maybe see if the week after that will be a marshmallow on top, like s'mores.
Yes. They're going to start doing the trick arrows as the title cards.
That'd be great. All right. So we are talking about, what is this called? Draw Back Your Bow. Carrie Cutter is a.k.a. Cupid, and we saw her at the end of last week. She's really, besides... taking a direct lift from the Sam Cooke song that you mentioned from... I want to say 1961, 62, maybe. Really great song. I was, you know, okay, draw back your bow, and I'm just thinking about it. And then as the episode comes on, I'm like, draw back your bow, I want. And then the song just kind of came back to me. I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember listening to that on AM radio a lot. So,
that's an older one.
She's also channeling the band ABC. This is what first came to mind when I heard about her. The line where they say, "Who broke my heart? You did, bow to the target, blame Cupid, Cupid. You think you're smart, stupid, stupid." And that's from Poison Arrow by ABC. So she was an interesting character. I thought, what's the actress? Amy Guminick, who I'm not familiar with, but I hear she's got a cult following from Supernatural, I guess, is a
show
that she's
been on. Yeah, I think
that's
right. She was on Supernatural, yeah.
I thought she did a really good job as a... I won't even call her a villain, because she's just crazy lady. And, you know, she had that sultry kind of voice, you know, the way she was talking to everybody. And it's like, you know, it's okay, it's good, you call her Cupid, that works. But I felt that overall her storyline, it was just a setup to introduce a character that they are going to bring back later. And it was kind of all wrapped up at the end. You know, it's like, oh, well, we didn't put her in Iron Heights, we gave her to Waller, and she's now a member of the Suicide Squad. It's okay. Is that safe? I don't know.
I actually trust Waller to keep her in line. I mean, she's got some pretty interesting characters in the Suicide Squad that she seems to do okay with.
Right, and it does give the character a purpose, but, you know, the backstory may not have been the most perfect, perfectly crafted thing, as we've seen with other stuff. Now, she is based on an actual character from the comics. Andrew Kreisberg created Cupid for the comics.
She's not a very old character. She hasn't been around that long.
No, she's from... I think she was in the incarnation previous to the New 52 Green Arrow. I think that's when she first showed up. So it would be like
2008.
Volume,
so, yeah, that would make sense.
Yeah, volume... Well, maybe that was volume 4. Volume 4 or volume 5 of Green Arrow, because the Brightest Day, Blackest Night... version, I think, only ran like 13 issues, so it might have been the one before that. But I don't know. So she's a cop who kind of went a little nuts, and then was she always an archer, or did she just kind of decide to pick up being an archer after Oliver saved her. Because if that's the case, that was, what, 6 months ago, I think they said?
Yep, because that was back during the Mirakuru riots.
The riots, right, or the... Yeah. Because she was, I was thinking, like, she really didn't do much archery in this particular episode, but at the end of last week's episode, she nailed those two cops in the kneecap and took them down. Now, maybe she wasn't aiming for their kneecaps, so maybe she's not that good an archer, but, you know, she's got some skills. It's not the easiest, I don't think you can just go out and pick up a bow. I mean, maybe some people can, but you just go pick up a bow and...
Point out, maybe, that if you are obsessed with something or someone,
mm-hmm.
and you really want, I mean like crazy obsessed, I'm not accusing you.
No, I know.
I'm not saying you're okay. But, and you spend 6 months trying to get good at something, I think you could probably make some good progress in that amount of time.
Now,
if you're crazy obsessed, you know.
Right. Well, 10,000 hours, right? That's supposedly the rule about how long it takes to get, you know, proficient at something. Are there 10,000 hours available in 6 months? I don't know. But
I don't know.
Yeah, that's possible. I mean, I'm not discounting it. It's just, I don't know. what are your thoughts about the character or the portrayal or anything?
Well, I was a little worried about it, especially just from our little introduction last week, because I thought that was kind of a cheesy little line. But first, I have to say that I thought Amy Guminick, I don't know how you say her name.
I think Guminick.
Guminick, okay, Amy Guminick actually did a really good job. I don't think she overplayed it too much, because that had the potential to really being, you know, a cheesy character that just overdid it. You know, I think back to some of the old Smallville villains, or even Batman and Robin, you know, from the 60s.
Right.
I don't know. I thought she did a pretty good job. I kind of felt it, and because of that, it made it a more enjoyable episode for me. I kind of liked it.
So, are you familiar with How I Met Your Mother?
A little bit. I mean, I know the show, of course, and I know what it's about, and I've seen quite a few episodes.
So you know Barney, who's the Neil Patrick Harris character. He's the
right,
the smarmy guy that's always going out with women. So
uh-huh.
He's got this thing that he describes on the show. It's the hot crazy scale. It's a graph.
Okay.
Hot goes up and down. Crazy goes left to right. And there is a diagonal line that goes from, you know, 0-0 diagonally out at a 90-degree angle or at a 45-degree angle called the Vicky Mendoza diagonal. And that's a girl that Barney dated. She jumped back and forth. You know, she would shave her head, but then she'd lose 10 pounds. So she was, like, crazy, but then she'd become hot. And then she stabbed Barney with a fork and then got a boob job. So she kept jumping across this line. So he named it, you know, after her. And I feel that this character of Cupid, she is high on both the hot and the crazy scale. But she doesn't necessarily fall more to one side or the other.
Yeah, no, she kind of struts along both sides, doesn't she?
Yeah, and she goes long and wide on both of those. So she's way up there at the top, in the top, right-hand corner.
Well, I felt they gave her enough of a backstory to kind of explain why she was like that, and why she had skill. You know, both fighting skill, not necessarily archery skill, but like I said, I could definitely put that puzzle piece in there to make it fit.
Right, but setting up the bomb and stuff like that, and having the access to, you know, do the, you know, the contacts, I guess, to the guy that hacked the or the triangulated the arrow's location and stuff like that.
Her little. Nerd compatriot there, Colby Bates or something like that, I think.
Kirby Bates. Yeah.
I was okay with it. Now, to me, it was kind of a, well, I don't want to say a throwaway episode, but a single episode that didn't have to happen in order for, you know, much to progress in the story.
Right.
But I think we may have even been talking about this on one of the other podcasts that sometimes you got to have those in there to break apart the flow. It gave an opportunity to show some flashbacks, but I don't know how connected those flashbacks were this week to the main storyline.
Right.
They just seem to be kind of progressing the flashback episodes or the flashback.
Yeah, I felt like it moved everything forward just a little bit. I feel like we lost the momentum that we were gaining on the Laurel training montages and how Sarah was killed.
I mean, they didn't mention that at all.
Right. There was nothing
about
that.
I don't know that they even said Sarah, and Laurel wasn't even in it.
Yeah, you're right. I don't think anyone mentioned Sarah at all.
No.
And like I said, there was the Hong Kong flashback, or I'm sorry, like you said, the Hong Kong flashback, you know, advanced that storyline a little bit. I thought we were going to have a little traction on that when we thought that the husband was dead. Mm-hmm. It seemed like soft focus. I was wondering if they were going to do something where it's like someone's dream that he was actually there, and then she was going to wake up and realize he still was dead. But
you noticed that too, didn't you? I kept wondering what it almost felt like. It didn't happen on every scene of the flashback.
Uh-huh. It's only like the wide shots.
Yeah,
I've noticed this in other flashbacks. I think some of the flashbacks utilize a softer focus, and it may also depend on who's directing the episode. But it would make sense to shoot the, you know, as a director, a choice that I can understand them making would be shooting a flashback with a different style of lighting or staging or something like that to help indicate to the audience that we are watching a flashback, you know, that the coloration might be a little different.
His little New Kids on the Block mullet thing, that's not good enough for you to know that he's... His Brad Pitt scruffy look, that's not...
Yeah. It does it for me, but, you know, I'm super paying attention.
It stood out to me because it was even less of a soft focus. And I don't know if this is what you officially call it, but I have some, you know, photo apps that call it this, a tilt shift.
Yeah.
Where it was like the middle was in focus and the top and bottom were out of focus.
Right. Yep.
So I didn't know if that was relevant for some... One point, I thought he was even maybe hallucinating or you know, getting... There was one part, I think, when he was getting beat up there for a second that it
on
felt like
dock.
Maybe... Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. That it was almost like he was kind of in his own little fog, you know, and like coming out of a beating. But then it happened later on. So I don't know. I didn't know if it was significant or not, but it didn't bother me. It just stood out.
Yeah. And the other storylines, you know, advanced, but I felt like we were kind of we didn't get enough of the other storylines, and the main focus of the it's hard to call them like even B plots because there were two or three sub stories going on, but the whole triad between Oliver, Felicity and Ray. I felt like we were just kind of – we're spinning our wheels again. We're going back to the same we've been to this dance before.
Yeah, and, sure.
You know.
I can see that. I felt like they were maybe wrapping up some loose ends to move on to some other stories. Getting Oliver over Felicity, I felt like that's what they were doing here.
I don't feel there was any resolution to any of that. I mean, because he's not over her. I mean, you know, because at the end of the episode, he was going to go and say, hey, Felicity, you know what? Maybe we should give this another try. I mean, at least that's what I felt that he was going to do, you know, to go see her, because Diggle's been pushing him throughout the episode. And then, you know, he's got that bad timing, which is all the writer's fault, actually. but, you know, he shows up just as, Ray lands one right on Felicity's lips. And then he's like, Oliver takes off and he's like, oh, man, I didn't mean to do that. And it's like, oh, yeah, this was a bad idea. If Oliver just hung out another second, it would have been okay. If he'd shown up a little bit earlier, it would have been okay. You know, so.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I disagree a little bit because I think after that, when he went and – I mean, he was mad, which is a good scene. And then Roy came in and, you know, they went off arm in arm to the, you know, Justice League dinner or whatever they were going to.
Yeah, Diggle's dinner.
Diggle's dinner. Yeah, because you got you. You know your.
What was interesting about the blocking of that scene, the way that the camera was set up and the you know the actors were positioned and stuff.
Uh huh.
Felicity's plant was a stand-in for Felicity in that shot, or in those shots in that sequence. It had its own light. It was lit in the foreground when Oliver scrapes everything off the table and throws it. And then when we get the reverse and Roy comes around the corner, the plant's right there in the middle of the frame, you know, and Roy's like, what's going on? And the plant's just kind of mocking Oliver, staring at him. And Oliver's like, nothing.
The mocking plant.
And he's like, oh, I hate that plant.
You think he was going to pick it up and throw it?
I was waiting for him to, you know, just, yeah, like pick it up and just like toss it in the trash can or something like that. Because... at least that would have, I think that would have been a little more, well, it might have been a little too humorous, and people might have forgotten, like, why is he taking it on this plant? But, you know, that's what Felicity brought in. That's her contribution to the Arrow Cave there, and I don't know, I think it matters that they're showing that, because it is not a stand-in necessarily, but what I want to say, you know, it represents Felicity.
Yeah, it represents her. So in that scene, it represented why he was mad, you know, what was going on, or why he was frustrated, I guess. I think it also kind of represents that, you know, she might not always be there for them. You know, like right in that scene, it was just a plant. Felicity wasn't there to help. And in the episode, you know, when she was at dinner with Ray, she couldn't really... be there for them like she has been in the past.
But she took care of so much. I mean, she's like helping Ray make the deal. Boo-boo-boo, her phone rings. Oh, excuse me, I got to go, you know, help a coworker out. She takes care of that. She's, you know, she's doing stuff remotely. I mean, she's overcommitting herself. I mean,
I can relate.
We had that episode, I think it was the second episode of the season, where she, you know, they kissed. And then she's like, I gotta go. And then she goes and works for Ray, and you're thinking, oh my gosh, she's like leaving the team because she says she needs a change. But she's still working with the team, and she's working at, you know, Palmer Tech now,
right.
Formerly Queen Consolidated. So.
But see, this is what I'm saying. I think there was some closure to that kind of idea. And, you know, yeah, sure, he still has feelings for her, but... when he went to dinner with Roy over to Diggle's, I think, you know, he kind of realized kind of how it was. And that plant is a representation of, look, Felicity's on the team. She's still there. She's still here in the cave, you know, as a plant. But,
yeah.
But that represented her still being on the team. She'll still help, but it might not be in the same way. And it might, you know, their relationship isn't going to be the same because he, you know, face it, he kind of blew it. She's moved on. And she said that, too. She said, look, then he needs to tell me himself. And he wasn't doing that. So,
oh, yeah. Oh, Diggle was not... Diggle should just stay out of that. That is not...
Do you think so?
Yeah. I mean, it was humorous, but like, you know, hey, you know, you need to cut him some slack. It's like, if Oliver wants me to cut him some slack, Oliver needs to come tell me. And Diggle's like, okay. It, you know, I...
I don't know.
Not that he's. I mean, I know why he's doing it, and he cares, right? But
sure, he's their friend,
right? But I don't know. I've been in situations like that where it's like, hey, you know, you need, not necessarily like a love relationship kind of thing, but just, you know, you got two friends that aren't communicating well, and you're like, hey, you know, I'm sure they'll apologize to you, and you go to the other person, and it's like, you know. I think you need to apologize or whatever. And, you know, they're just like, well, they need to talk to me first. It's like, all right, I'm just going to step away.
It does. It puts you in an awkward situation being in the middle. But, I mean, for me, I'd rather people talk about it and share with me what I need to know so I can, you know, I'm a guy. I don't usually notice
you just
those
don't
things.
I know.
I don't notice. You've got to tell me. I don't know what to do. Please.
Can I just also point out... Oliver was being honestly, he was being a real jerk.
Oh, sure.
There were two things that I'm thinking about, and I'm not saying that I'm not guilty of maybe doing stuff like this, but, you know, he's being more passive aggressive than usual. He was like, you know, or I guess Felicity said, I can't work tonight. I need the night off. I'm supposed to be helping Ray with some work that he's doing. And, you know, is that okay? Can I have the night off? And he's just like, do what you want. It's like, dude, that's not, you know, not cool.
It's like when you ask your wife if she's mad at you, you know, hey, are you okay? Yeah, I'm fine.
What do you think? you're totally cool, right?
Yeah, everything's good, right? I'm fine. Oh, okay. All right, then.
Yep. If you texted that to me, I would know, you know, I would completely understand because it just says, I'm fine. Oh, good. She's fine. That's why I do all my arguments over text.
Oh, that's a good idea. I'm going to have to start that.
Which is what also, I mean, Oliver kind of does that. He's basically breaking up with Felicity while he's talking to another woman that he's breaking up with that he's not even really seeing because she's crazy over the radio.
I don't know if he's breaking up with her as much as explaining himself.
Okay, yeah, that's true. And I appreciated the way that scene was written because, you know, obviously he's talking to Carrie about, you know, why this won't work. But, of course, he's also talking to Felicity about why this won't work.
Yep.
And, that's kind of not cool, man.
Well, there you go. And right there is the connection. And that explains why they had Cupid on this week. And because they're, you know, dealing with this love story and putting some, I would say closure on it, but they're moving it along so they can move on with whatever is going to happen with them, right? And I think Oliver is probably going, from here on out, he's probably going to treat it in a different way, and I don't think he's going to get all upset about it like this anymore, at least not that openly. But I was reading something with Amy Guminick. Is that what did you say? Guminick?
Guminick.
Amy Guminick. But they were doing an interview with her or somebody and asking her, you know, why she's on here. And I think it is because she was saying that it's because of that relationship with Felicity. And he learns a lot about that through dealing with this obsessed woman. And I think that's why they threw this character in this week, is so they could kind of move that story along. Also, I think they need to move, you know, they needed to move the story along with Ray and Felicity. And there's, I think there's a lot more going on. We've said this all season, but there's a lot more going on with Ray than we have been told. And I think Felicity's a big part of that.
She seems to be. I mean, she's definitely in his sights. Now, whether it's just a love interest, you know, attraction, or if there's, you know, something bigger, I'm leaning after this episode to the something bigger. Like he obviously is attracted to Felicity. I mean, she's a very pretty lady, and you know, he'd probably be a fool to, you know, not keep things platonic like he wants to. But why did he invite her to dinner? Because he would not have been able to make that deal with Mr. Gardner for the Nevada mine without Felicity.
Yes.
Now, he didn't coach her about that, but he's, you know, just the way he is.
He knows her. He knows what she does and how she talks to people and what she's capable of. So before this episode, I would have said a little of both. But now I'm leaning, like you said, yeah, like he's got bigger plans. And he might be using her skills and her, you know, her talent to move it along. And I think she's now done that twice. Because didn't she do that when she took that, I guess it was a hard drive or something, and she got some of that information that was seemingly destroyed?
Oh, yeah, she repaired the hard drive for him with the OMAC blueprints on it.
Uh-huh, right. And so she's done that for him, and now she's kind of scored this nice deal to get this mine that he needs.
Right, and let me correct you. You said he had bigger plans. I'm going to say he has smaller plans.
Ah, there you go.
Yeah. So yeah, we got to see. Yeah, we got to see his design for the Atom suit, ATOM. So I got to figure out what does that stand for.
Yeah, I tried to go back and see if I could see on the screen when it said Atom if there was any indication of what it was, but I didn't see anything.
No, I didn't see anything either. I have a screenshot I'm going to post on our Facebook episode screen caps page of the suit arm. Because there was not a good picture that I could get of him with that holographic representation of the suit, very Iron Man ish esque.
Yeah.
When he was putting that together, so
now speaking of the suit and Ray Palmer and Felicity and all that, did you notice that the dress that he gives her is blue?
Yes.
And he's very blue oriented. Just like his suit. Now, his suit's blue and red.
Yeah, his suit is mostly blue with a little bit of red. Right, yeah. That is true.
But red, we've got red covered. You know, Roy's got red covered, and Oliver's got green covered. So, and Laurel and Sarah clearly have black covered. So,
yes.
I think blue is Ray's color.
Very good. We need to get a yellow character on the show then. Like, maybe the Gobbler could be all in yellow.
I think he seemed more like orange and brown.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. Oh, that worked. You know, okay. Earth colors.
Yeah.
So, so it sounds like Ray Palmer will be getting his Atom suit on here at some point. he's got this mine now, which he wants to have the, what is it, dwarf star alloy.
Yes.
Not Death Star alloy, but Dwarf Star alloy taken from the mine. He wants that mined immediately because, in the comic books at least, that's what helps power the Atom's size-changing suit / powers. I mean, it's more of a... He's not really a metahuman. It's a mechanical sort of process, I guess, for his shrinking and growing and things like that. Very much looking forward to that. But, yeah, what's his plan? I'm kind of bummed that he changed the name of Queen Consolidated, though. That's unfortunate.
Yeah, that was an interesting turn of events. I didn't expect that.
No, and it means probably that Oliver, well, at least at this point, is not going to get it back. I guess if he did, I mean, he could always change the name back to Queen Consolidated. But, you know... From a business standpoint, that seems kind of weird to change the name. You know, the CEO doesn't necessarily control the name of the company. Like when Tim Cook took over Apple, he didn't change the name of Apple from what it was before, you know, to...
Cooks?
Yeah. Just whatever.
No, but I got the impression that Palmer Technologies was maybe a name of... something he owned before, his own company or his own product or something.
I had that thought, yeah.
And so it's more like a merger, and it's they're just kind of acquiring that business, and Palmer Technologies would be the main name for everything. But I don't know if that's the case. It's just kind of what it felt like.
Yeah, they swap out the signs real quick. If you notice, they got the neon sign up on the outside real fast as well.
Oh, do they? I didn't even notice that. On the
there
building,
was an exterior
the one that
shot.
Used to be the
instead of the... Yeah, instead of the big Q on the outside, the big green Q on the outside, it said Palmer Technologies in the same font that the sign inside did.
Huh.
With the little atom or the electron circling the P.
Uh-huh.
So, which is very much like the Atom's logo, right?
On his head?
Oh, on his head or on his chest, because doesn't he have like a little... nucleus thing on his chest, I thought,
yeah,
as well. Maybe
in
he has
some,
on his
I think.
Head.
I think in some ones, at least the older ones that I remember, too, it's on his head.
Okay, right, on his forehead,
kinda like,
right?
Kind of like, you know, Captain America
right.
kind of thing.
Yeah, on the forehead there. Mm-hmm. I like, too, that when he unveiled the logo, he kind of spun his finger like he was indicating the electrons spinning around the P, and then when... Oliver, or when Diggle said, "Hey, I like your new logo," to Felicity, she's like, "Yeah," and she kind of spun her finger too. You know, she's already picking up some of the things that Ray is doing, and of course, you know, it just he seemed to be having fun with it, right? You know, he's like, hey, look, here's my new logo. Woo, there's a little thing spinning. See, isn't that cool? I mean, he's, for as intelligent as he is, he also seems a little flaky, but that may just be a public persona.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Putting people off and saying, wow, this guy's just, you know, because he seems to be that kind of crazy CEO like Richard Branson. You know, he even mentioned him in this episode. But I think there's a lot more going on with him that we're going to find out. Now, not necessarily that he's a bad character, but he may just be involved in some things that are going to come to a head and maybe bite him in the butt that Oliver's going to have to help. You know, I think there's going to be another team up later in the season here, probably. Yeah. I hope so, at least.
We don't have any other than him being secretive, we don't really have any indication that whatever his intentions are, you know, evil or self. What's the word I'm looking for?
Yeah.
Not necessarily any selfish kind of motivation for him.
I guess. Right?
Yeah. So it could very mm-hmm. well be something that would help people. That's, you know, as
I mean, that's what he wants
preaching.
To do. But I have a feeling that, of course, something will happen, and whatever it is, even if it is the grandest plan to rebuild Starling City, it'll turn and there'll be a problem. You know,
it could be, or there'll be a problem in whatever he's doing. Ends up helping with it, you know, but
right. If the city's not in danger by episode 21 through 22, then I don't feel that Arrow has done its job this season.
Yeah, I agree completely. we'll be wondering what's going on, what's wrong.
I'm waiting for the other shoot to
drop. That just knowing the background though of the character, because he is a hero, you know, he's not a villain.
Right.
Knowing that, I think eventually, you know, he's going to, whatever happens, whether he causes it or not, he's going to end up helping in some way.
And by the, once he dons his costume, we will have about 50% of the Justice League have been on this show then. I think that is just tremendous. Now, it's not, you know, I think a lot of people think of the Justice League as also, you know, being like Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman. But, I mean,
you had your secondary tier characters too, though.
Right. Well, and there was a whole, era in the 80s where Superman kind of was off limits. He wasn't allowed to be used in there because they had rebooted the DC universe and they were trying to just build him on his own. So the Justice League consisted of, like you said, a lot of B and some C characters. Now, Batman was in it, and Amanda Waller kind of came in and out. But we had, like, the third or fourth tier Green Lantern. We had Blue Beetle. We had Booster Gold. Blue Beetle, I'm thinking now, remember we were talking during the summer about Ted Kord was going to be on the show because that's how
right.
we read the character release that they were looking for actors for.
Yeah.
I think they decided to change that into Ray Palmer, obviously.
I agree with you. But it was more than just the character. It was also clues that they gave on the show, Cord Industries and things like
yes.
that. But I think you're right. I think they did change it.
Yeah. I want to say that I read something where they were thinking about doing Ted Kord, but then they changed it to do Ray Palmer. Because remember, we had also read that Guggenheim had said that they were offered characters to use, and they like never had imagined that they would be allowed to use these characters.
Mm-hmm.
I think Ray Palmer, they just said, hey, you guys want to use the Atom? And they're like, what? Are you kidding? Sure, of course. So
excellent. Well, they still don't have Plastic Man on there, though.
Plastic Man would be awesome, right?
And have they ever mentioned Patrick O'Brien? I don't know if they've ever mentioned that name.
The guy that writes the boat books?
No, the Plastic Man was named Patrick O'Brien.
Oh, was he?
Yes.
See, I did not. I am not up on my Plastic Man trivia. I do not remember that from the ABC Saturday morning Plastic Man Fang Face Hour.
No, you don't remember that?
No.
Okay. Well, so, all right. Well, hey, they got more seasons in them.
Okay.
They could
show let's move from Ray down the alphabet just a little bit to Roy. I felt that, again, we got a little bit of continuation of his storyline, but what, maybe three lines, four lines. There was not a lot. He's just being kind of mopey. He's still upset that Oliver hadn't told him that he had killed this cop, and he's lying to Oliver.
You think that's why he's upset, that Oliver hadn't told him? Or you think he's upset
I think he's upset that he killed the cop.
Oh, okay.
But, I think there's also probably some upsetness that, you know, it's like, well, why did you keep this from me? It's like, I should know. And he feels responsible. You know, he's lying like a teenager being caught watching porn about looking up stories on the dead cop. He's like, no, I'm just looking for cheap booze for Thea's club. I'm like, really?
I'm just watching porn. I'm not looking up the police.
Yeah. That was like a 40-inch monitor, dude. How are you hiding when somebody walks up behind you?
He was buying stuff off Amazon. That's what he didn't want him to know. He's spending their last of their millions.
Yeah, exactly.
Their petty cash. But again, because Roy went with him to dinner, see, it could have just been Oliver at dinner, but Roy went with him. I feel like they're putting some closure on that. So I bet you they don't even address that anymore.
Oh, you think so?
I do. I kind of do. I think they're going to.
I feel it's tied up in that Sarah storyline so that it will have to be in there somewhere, because as soon as they bring up Sarah's death again, oh, yeah, I remember I dreamed I killed her, but no, I really killed a cop. I don't know. I didn't see it as closure. I understand where you're coming from. I think that may actually be what they were going for. And I enjoy the fact that Oliver continues to look out for him. You know, Roy, you know, is at the beginning, he's like, oh, you know, I don't know why I'm out there. I feel bad. Like, I feel like he says when he puts on the costume or the outfit, he feels a fraud or something like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, and Oliver's, you know, like, you know, you're doing good, you know, and he is being the mentor that, you know, he wanted for himself, and, you know, that that Ted Grant couldn't be for Isaac Stanzler and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I'm glad that Oliver's sticking with him, you know, not hanging him out to dry, and that Roy is not just continuing just to be so down in the dumps that he's not accepting others' help, because that's almost as bad as, you know, not having anyone want to help you. If, like, people are wanting to help you and you're just sitting there, it's like, no, it's fine, I'm okay. That's as destructive as
it is. And we'll see. And he was upset with himself for just being, you know, totally getting snuck up on by Cupid. I mean, he got totally owned by Cupid there.
He's still learning. And, yeah, I mean, he got, bested by Nyssa. I think, didn't Ted Grant take him out? Or Isaac Stanzler take him out last week as well? He keeps getting trumped by the people they're going up against, but
a little bit. But see, we'll see how that plays, because I think he's going to start doing better now. I think he's going to get over this. That's my prediction.
I really did like the fact that Oliver was using his code name this week. I thought that was great over the radio. I thought that's great. You know, it's like, yeah, let's start using code names for the people over the probably encrypted radio channels, but who knows who's listening?
Hey, yeah, you never know.
So
and
that
Kirby,
was cool.
Kirby Bates might be listening.
Right, exactly. Now, I just want to say this is my absolute worst storyline out of the entire episode. This was so lame. It was the DJ douchebag and Thea. We don't even get the guy's name. That's how much of a jerk he is. He doesn't even want to audition. He's like, hey, I'm here, you can hire me. And she's like, no, you got to audition. He's like, I don't audition. See ya. Or was he a later princess? Which, I'm like, are they trying to invoke Han Solo here? That was where I went with that line. And then Thea's in trouble. I don't go to clubs like this, like Verdant. So, I, you know, the difference between, like, trance, house, hip-hop, and, you know, rave music, it's all kind of lost on me. So it's like, I don't know, why aren't people dancing? And all of a sudden this guy comes on and woo, everybody comes out and dances. It's like, no, I don't think so. I'm just waiting for her to hire Brian Brown and Tom Cruise to serve drinks behind the bar now.
Yeah, that I would like. Yeah, no, I got nothing on this one. I'm not even going to argue with you on this one. I hated it.
Yeah, oh, no, please don't argue with me, because that would make me feel real bad.
No, I mean, this guy had absolutely no appealing characteristics to me. None.
Right. I mean, and she's obviously in a bind. She's like, oh, my Spotify playlist would be better. And it's like, okay, put on the Spotify playlist then. But then he comes in and he's like, hey, you know, this is a train wreck. This is, and she's like, fine, you're hired. And he's like, I want all this, you know, what do you say? Half the house tickets. Like, who asks for that?
A DJ?
Are you serious?
Serious? No. I agree.
Ugh. And then she's like, fine, two or three nights, whatever, exclusive. And it's like, you're just going to make a deal sight unseen with this guy after he was a jerk earlier and he was a jerk now. And you're like, you know, I mean, the club's, I don't know. I guess, you know, the whole point was if the music's playing and people are dancing, they're going to be drinking and making money. But I'm sure she's got a cover charge or whatever. It's, I don't know. And then he's like, I'm going to kiss you instead of taking your money. And this is in a way that is more egregious to me than them setting up Carrie just to be a new character in the Suicide Squad to use, you know, in a future episode. They're now trying to shoehorn this new character in to be sort of a wedge to put between Roy, who's already depressed, and Thea, you know, because they're on the outs, you know, to add some more sexual tension or something, or, you know, and maybe this is just a CW thing. I don't know. This was horrible. Oh, I want you guys to get rid of this story.
It was definitely a CW thing.
Yeah.
And it didn't even match the character of Thea right now. Thea would never...
She said she can take care of herself. Obviously,
yeah,
she can't.
She would never go for things like that just because the guy sounded confident. I mean, she would never agree to giving him all that money just because she didn't have a DJ at that particular moment. Please. No. It was bad.
Wendy and Beth,
it actually made me argue. I mean,
yeah,
I'm angry.
I respect your writing on previous episodes, but this character, whatever the hell his name is, because you didn't even identify him, get rid of him. I don't want to see him again on the show.
Yeah,
if anybody out there has a valid reason why this character matters, I'd love to hear about it. I'd love you to email us. I'd love for you to post on our Facebook page. Call me a douchebag on Twitter. You know, whatever. I can take it.
#douchebag.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. All right. So I kind of hate for that to be the final word on the episode, but...
all right. Well, I will say then, I enjoyed this episode. It was not my favorite of the season. I don't think it was that important, but there was some good banter between Ray and Felicity. There was some good... I felt some good potential closure for certain storylines that we are done with and don't need. And I give it a thumbs up.
I don't give it a thumbs down because there was enough stuff going on that I found interesting, but I'm kind of neutral on it then if we're just doing a thumb scale.
Okay.
Well, otherwise, I'd give it like a 3.5 out of 5 stars.
Okay. Sounds good.
Okay. Let me go over some of the references here. Some of these, I've seen varying things online for some of these references, so I've got a slightly different take than some other people do, and that may be interesting here. First off, the apartment where they found the crazy stuff tacked up on the wall, like if I'm going to become psychotic, I need to rent an apartment where I can, like, light a bunch of candles and just tape stuff all over the walls. And I mean, that's a lot of work for someone to do that.
It is. And you also have to have another apartment directly across where you can watch.
Yes. The people come into your first apartment, right?
And you got to know when your obsession is going to show up so you can take time to light all the candles before they get there.
I also didn't understand how Oliver knew to smash the arrowhead open to find the piece of paper inside. He just starts smashing the arrowhead. I'm like, what the heck is he doing?
I thought he was just mad.
I did too. Maybe it was one of those, and it just wasn't shot well, but that he was really upset and he was kind of smashing it, and then he's like, oh, wait, what's this? But anyway, the piece of paper said 15 Barron Street, apartment 7. I believe that is a reference to Mike Barron, who is a writer for DC Comics. Actually, he's probably more famous for writing The Flash than he is for Green Arrow. But I think he has written some either Green Arrow or Justice League stories. Then the one that I was very excited to see was the use of Sherwood Florist, which is great because there was also a reference to Robin Hood made in this episode. Robin Hood is from Sherwood Forest, and this is Sherwood Florist, a greenhouse. In the comic books, that's a store that Ollie and Dinah, aka Black Canary, lived above in Green Arrow, the Longbow Hunters.
Didn't they run the store?
Yeah, she ran the store, and it was the way it was designed. It was in Seattle, and it actually looked like a castle.
Right.
And downstairs was the florist, and upstairs was their apartment. So it was one of those things where, you know, you finish work and then you go upstairs. When I read that in the comic books, I thought, that is just brilliant. Because they actually reference it, and they say, you know, it's a joke because of the fact that he's Green Arrow. And, of course, a lot of people know he's Green Arrow, so everybody gets a good chuckle out of that. The people that Ray met with, Mr. and Mrs. Gardner, are named after Gardner Fox. He is a writer. I find that weird as a first name, but actually that's this guy's first name was Gardner and his last name was Fox instead of being the surname of Gardner. He was the creator of the Golden Age Flash, but also, more importantly, and the reference specifically for this episode would be the Silver Age Adam character. He was the one that brought him to the comic books. Now, we mentioned Kirby Bates earlier, the tech guy that triangulated where Oliver's hideout was at Verdant, which, as it shows on screen, it says Verdant Nightclub, and it gives the address, and he's like, well, I don't know exactly which building it is. It's like, what the hell are you talking about, dude? You triangulated it, and it says the name right there.
He's an expert at computers, not Google Maps. Give him a break.
All right. So I believe Kirby Bates is probably a nod to Jack Kirby, an artist who worked on Green Arrow, as well as a number of other characters, and Kerry Bates, who is a writer for DC Comics, and he's written The Flash, he's written Justice League, and a number of other titles for them. They mentioned Cupid is, Diggle mentions that Cupid is even nuttier than the last woman they had on the squad, which I think is a great reference to the off-screen appearance of Harley Quinn, as we heard in the, I think it was in the Suicide Squad episode, but it might have been one of the other episodes towards the end of season two. We talked about the Adam suit, which looks similar to the suit in the comics, at least from its coloration. It looks like it's going to be more of an armor, kind of an exoskeleton thing, kind of like Iron Man, whereas in the comics it's more of a, his suit's more of a, what do I want to say, like a Lycra spandex, you know, looking thing.
Sure.
We talked about the Dwarf Star Alloy and the Palmer Tech logo. Oh, at the very end of the episode, Captain Boomerang, a.k.a. Digger Harkness, shows up, and he is normally a Flash villain, and we will see more of him in the next episode with the Flash-Arrow crossover, so I think that's going to be really cool. If people listen to Scarlet Velocity, our Flash podcast, they'll find out that you are a huge fan of the Flash villain Captain Cold, while I am a big fan and have been looking forward to Captain Boomerang, and I'm glad he is here in the first third of the season. This is really cool.
Should be good. Wish he had an Australian accent, though.
Well, he is Australian.
Well, but he didn't have an accent in the, at least in this scene.
I listened to it again. He does have an accent. He just doesn't say much, but he's got an accent. I don't know if you would necessarily typify it as Australian. It could. It sounds like it could, you know, be a, you know, British of some kind.
Oh, okay. But I'll check it out again.
Yeah, he did have an accent. And just me knowing that he's Australian, I just kind of read it as Australian. But, he only said, I don't know what, 10 words, I guess, total. So, and then one other thing from the flashback, Maceo calls Oliver Gaijin, which means outsider. Which is, Oliver obviously identifies himself as well as the lady, I can't remember her name now, as an outsider, since she's Japanese living in China. Her alter ego in the comics is Katana, which we got to see her katana-ing, I guess.
Sure.
But she was also a member of a team called Batman and the Outsiders. So I thought that was an interesting little nod to that.
Hmm.
And do we get any feedback this week on that we want to share with anybody?
Yeah, everybody? You know, we got a little bit more feedback from Ollie Verdant, who we have heard from before, and is just on our Facebook page a lot, and left us a quote from Mark Guggenheim about who killed Sarah, you know, the mystery of who killed Sarah. And he said, Mark Guggenheim said, you know, that the person that they reveal to be the killer of Sarah is not just going to be somebody that they introduce to you, you know, and he says when the ultimate reveal happens, it'll be someone who you know, or maybe the reveal has already happened. Hopefully we've opened up a world where anything is possible. And to me, that's the most fun part of working on the show. And we've kind of talked about that, you know, how,
yeah,
no, well, I guess I don't think so, but
it was the Flash. Because he could throw arrows really strong.
Maybe
I don't know. I'm going to keep coming up with it. I'm just going to guess everybody, and then at one point I'll be going, woo, I was right. Because if it's someone we know, I could just guess
it
everybody.
It was the douchebag DJ. That's who it was.
Yeah. Oh, that would be horrible.
It would be horrible. No, it's not going to be that. It's not.
Okay,
it's
good.
It's going to be somebody we have talked about, I bet, but not necessarily been 100% right about.
I still got a coworker. He's going full on Ra's al Ghul. I'm like, It just seems too obvious.
Yeah, not enough.
But maybe
evidence
we'll
pointing
see.
To him.
Hmm. So, all right. Well, that's all we've got for this week's episode of Green Justice. Thanks very much for tuning in and listening to us.
Yes, and we hope that you loved the episode. And if you did, make sure you leave feedback for us on iTunes. Pop over there and give us a good review. Also, if you want to get a hold of us, shoot us an email, greenjustice@randomchatter.com, or, hey, get over on Twitter and share our podcast with people on Twitter and even Facebook. You can get a hold of us on our Facebook page or post something, facebook.com/greenjusticepodcast.
I was going to say you should do more of the episode or more of the show with that voice. That was really nice.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. I'll try a little bit more.
You can also check out the other shows that Josh and I host in our normal voices, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files and Scarlet Velocity, a Flash podcast, which is available via randomchatter.com. Also, all shows...
And you can tune in for Arrow After Dark with Jay and Josh.
All shows are also available in the iTunes Store and through Stitcher for Android or iOS. And remember, sorry. And of course, if you enjoy this podcast, please be sure to tell your friends about us and let them know about Josh's sultry, sultry voice. And remember, if you don't keep listening, you have failed this city. Stupid.
This podcast is not endorsed by Warner Brothers Television or DC Entertainment. The official website for Arrow can be found at www.cwtv.com. Green Arrow, Arrow, and related elements are copyright DC Entertainment and Warner Brothers Television.